It's October what, 12th, 13th, and I'm going to open up with the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for having grace and mercy on me, a sinner. Help us glorify you tonight by carrying your message. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, we're on We Agnostics, which is one of my seven or eight favorite chapters. They're all good. This is especially powerful for me because I don't know how it was written. It's so well put together. There's so much spiritual information in these pages. And every time I read, I see something new, and I saw some new stuff today. We've spent two meetings on this, and for those who've listened to the podcast, I'm not going to review too much, but we covered what makes us an alcoholic, what are our two choices, what do we have to face, what's our problem. I might as well answer the questions. What makes you an alcoholic? If you want to quit entirely or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're an alcoholic. You have to choose between to be doomed to an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual life are not always easy alternatives to face. People die because they can't see that there are only two doors. They can't face for themselves that either they're going to die an alcoholic death or live a spiritual life. They can't even see it. They're not different called alternatives once you can see it. What makes you see it? Desperation, pain, your first step. Your life's completely unmanageable. You can't going on the way you were. And then it says, lack of power, that's my dilemma. I don't have any power. And the dilemma is I don't know how to find it. Now, I had a lot of power, but it was mine. We're on page 45, I'm reviewing quickly. So we had to find a power to live in. It had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. Now, if it's not obvious to you, you're not done with your first step yet. And so the book is about where and how I find the power. That's why we go through the book. It says its main object of the book is to enable me to find a power greater than me, which will solve my problem. And my problem is, I only have one problem, right? My conscious separation from God. And if I have a relationship with God, then I don't have any problems anymore. I just have situations. And if I'm in the world with God, in the world of the Spirit, I have a power not to drink. And if I'm in my world that I've created, where I'm the center of the universe, I have no power not to drink. It's not that complicated. And I saw that clearly after doing 1,800 meetings. And so they're going to talk about God. And then they talk about how we didn't like the God idea. Why not? Because we don't want to depend on anybody. And we don't want to be accountable. And then it talks about we didn't want to be dependent upon a power. We didn't want to be weak at the top of 46. And then it says, we found, I'm going to review on page 46, second paragraph. So here's what they found. As soon as. Now, as soon as is right away, right? So as soon as you're able to lay aside prejudice. Now, who makes me able to lay aside prejudice? Me. I'm the only one who can let go of my old ideas, right? Prejudice is prejudgment. And I still have prejudgment. Somebody told me to read this book. I said, I don't want to read the book. I'm not going to like it. They said, read the book. So I've had that book on my Kindle, and five people told me to read it. So I started to read it. It was pretty hard to read. And so I told them no. They said, you need to keep going. So tonight I'm going to read some more of that book. It's called The Shack. A lot of people have liked it. Yeah, a lot of people have liked it. So my minister told me yesterday to read it. People listening to podcasts probably going to turn off now. I'm just rambling. So anyway, here it says, as soon as you're able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than yourselves, you commence to get results. What result do you get? You're less self-centered. You're starting to turn away from you to God, to something else. And an alcoholic, that's a big deal. You see, that's a big deal. What was that say? In the second step proposition, that Dr.
Thibault.
Yeah, he said that we're egomaniacs with a narcissistic personality disorder. When an alcoholic can begin to see, let go of his power and turn to another power, he's no longer truly alcoholic. And if he can accept the idea that there's a power greater than himself, and he continues to accept that, then he won't drink again. And if he can turn your ship around and stay in that direction, that's what Anne read today. God can and will in those who seek. So if we're seeking God, truly seeking, we're going to be okay, because God will put the right people in our lives to help us do what he wants us to do. You get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. It's hard to comprehend it. We discovered we don't need to consider another conception of God. My own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. The approach in steps 1 through 3, and effect a contact with him, steps 4 through 9, and living in 10, 11, 12. And read it tonight. Step 11, we seek to improve our conscious contact with God, seeking only knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So that's the name of the game. And it says, as soon as I admit, let in the idea, the possible existence of a creative intelligence. Isn't that nice of me? To let in the idea that maybe my creator's better than me? Now, you talk to some people, and actually you talk to some alcoholics who are new, and you think they created themselves. I mean, it's really, as soon as you admit the possible existence, a spirit of the universe, you begin to be possessed with a new sense of power and direction. You see, this is really important stuff. It's not read at any meetings. But this is why people die. They don't lay aside prejudice. They don't express a willingness. They don't want to have a conception of others' conception of God, but they won't come up with their own. And they won't admit the possible existence of a creative intelligence. Or they say they believe in God, and they pray to God, but they've never let God work. So agnostic means those without knowledge of God. And when every alcoholic comes in is agnostic. If you listen to Joe and Charlie, they explained it so well when they did their big book study. They can't have true knowledge and trust in God if I haven't ever allowed him to work in my life. If I've run my whole life and lived a life run on self-will, I've never let God work. I've never seen what he can do. I've never learned to trust him. And remember, it says I have to live on a different basis if I want to live. I have to live on a basis of relying and dependence on God. And I never did that. I thought I always had good motives. Anybody else think that? My motives were always good. I was always trying to do the best, but they were my motives. And then here's what I did. And I saw it last night. I saw everything that's wrong with my life last night watching the ball game. It was a big game, and they had a relief pitcher in, and the score was tied. And he walked somebody, he gave up another thing, and he obviously was not right, and the manager let him stay in. He had the wrong pitcher, he didn't change. And what was my mistake? I had the wrong manager, it was me. So they should have fired that manager. It's too late, their season's over. But I had to fire him myself. I wasn't a bad person, I just had the wrong manager, me. And if I keep managing, I'll have bad days, and I'll get angry and fearful and take decisions based on self and harm people. I don't want to do that anymore. So I watch very carefully for when self comes in. And that's step 10. I do that anyway. And we found, here's what they found, that God does not make too hard terms for those who seek him. Now, everybody likes that line. But you have to seek him 100%. You can't. A lot of people come to AA and they want to swim in the lake, but they just put their toes in. They never get in the water. They dip their toes. They're going to try it out before they get in. You have to go in 100%. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. And then God reveals himself to us. It is open, we believe, to all men. We're all sinners. We all need God. We all fall short. And he doesn't make too hard terms. We just need to seek him. And we want to be obedient to God, not to ourselves anymore. And God never turned away from me. I turned away from him. He's always there. We're going to read that further on. And if we don't seek him, we can't get the power. Now, whose fault was that? It's not God's fault. I made a decision not to seek him. So I want to make a decision to seek him. I make it every morning. I pray when I wake up, first thing. Big Book says, before you think of your day, stop, because it's your plans. We don't want your plans. We want God's plans. So it says, we ask God to direct our thinking, divorcing it from selfish inside of self-seeking motives. I try to do that before I get out of bed. And what I'm saying is, I don't want to run the show today, God. Now, that won't help me at 10 o'clock, but it's a good way to start. And it's the humility that I need his help. So it says, when therefore we speak to you, and then we talked about the conception of God has to be one that makes sense to you. And it has to be one that you can call at 3, talk to at 3 in the morning. He can choose any conception of life provided it makes sense to him. It has to make sense. It has to be all powerful. And then it says at the start, this is all we needed to commence spiritual growth to affect our first conscious relation with God. Now, the steps is all about establishing a relationship with God. So you can trust and rely on him, and he can change the way you see things all the time, so you don't have to have fear or anger anymore, and you don't have to have bad decisions. And then you start, in the beginning, all you start with this idea of this concept of God. So here's the second step in the Big Book. It's on page 47, second paragraph. You just ask yourself one short question. That's all it is. A lot of people spend time on step two. I don't know how you can spend a long time. It's one question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? Yes. As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure them that he is on his way. And the way to what? To the world of the Spirit. To the world where God's your director. God's in charge. He'll take care of you. You're his child. He'll give you everything you need if you stay close to him and do his work well, right? Isn't that on page 63? Contract with God. It's repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Now, they're building an arch in the first 9 steps to freedom. Freedom from the bondage of self. And the cornerstone is this belief that there's a power greater than yourself. What's the foundation of this arch? Does anybody want to build the arch to freedom? Yes. And who want, and you stay through it by doing 10, 11, and 12 all the time. Now, what's the foundation of the arch? Anybody remember? Willingness. Pain. You have to be completely willing based upon your knowing that you're powerless over alcohol and you're powerless to have a manageable life. So you become willing with the desperation of a drowning man. Remember, the flimsy reed that's pulling us out of the water becomes the hand of God. And so the arch is composed. Step 3 is the keystone of the arch, the decision not to play God. And steps 4 through 9 fill the arch. And when you do your fifth step, it says, have you put your stones in place? Have you filled them with cement? Is your arch on rock or is it on sand? See, and that's from Scripture. That's from Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount. And so The cornerstone is just to simply believe that there's a power greater than you that can help you. And it can't be you anymore. I can't be the power. It has to be greater than me. Does that make sense? So it says this was great news. For we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. Now here they start with the belief and the faith. So you don't have to start with faith, you just start with belief. And why are some things difficult to believe? Because we have old ideas. Who tells you it's difficult to believe? You do. You're the one that tells yourself it's difficult to believe. And I've heard that a lot. A lot of people don't like me because I talk about God too much. I've heard that a lot. I said, fine, don't come back. It's okay, but how's that working for you? You know, and I didn't say that because that's me, but I was thinking that. I just said, you know, that's fine. You know, I'm glad you came. And if you ever want to come back, we'll be here. It says, I wish I had had what that man has. Why don't you have it? I'm sure it would work if only I could believe as he believes. Why don't you believe? You see, we're the ones that prevent it. And they're going to tell us why in the next paragraph. But I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. Why? See, they're asking, when you're reading this, you have to say, well, why don't I have this problem? So besides the seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves, now here's why you can't believe and why you can't have the faith and why you can't accept as surely true. Because I found myself handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice. So I was blocked from faith and accepting things because of my own obstinance, sensitivity, and unreasoning prejudice. Prejudice is prejudgment. It's unreasoning. You can't argue with an alcoholic. You can't help them let go of their old ideas. It's just futile. And so you're handicapped. And so I'm blocked. And this is a characteristic of a self-will person who's running on old ideas. And then listen to this. I circled the words. I hadn't seen this before. Many of us have been so touchy. So we're not only obstinate, sensitive, and unreasoning prejudice, we're touchy. We're so touchy. Have you ever met any touchy people? I'm not talking about physically touchy. That even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. I mean, it's so true. How many times have we read this paragraph, Stu? And I see it. So I'm obstinate, sensitive, unreasoning prejudice. I'm touchy, and I bristle with antagonism. How's that working for me? So here's the next line. It's so great. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. It has to be abandoned. Nothing's going to happen till I abandon it. Now, I'm the only one that can abandon it. You see, I'm the only one that can do this. God won't make me abandon it unless I want to. He lets us stay this way. He'll let us suffer. He's inside of us, but he just watches us. It's like the prodigal son leaving dad. But the key thing about the prodigal son is not only that he was in the pig pen and came to himself after he'd been there a long time, but the dad was always waiting for him. And as soon as he started to come home, dad came running to him. And God's always waiting for us. He's just waiting for us. And so you're in the pig pen if you're obstinate, sensitive, and unreasoning prejudice, if you're touchy, bristle with antagonism. And if this sort of thinking had to be abandoned, if you don't abandon it, nothing's going to change. Though some of us resisted, now here's what they found. This is so well written. They found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Now they had all these feelings, and why did they find no difficulty in casting them aside? Well, here's how the book's written. They tell you the statement, and then they're going to tell you why. Because I was faced with alcoholic destruction. If I'm faced with alcoholic destruction, and I can see the truth, a spiritual life or death and insanity, then I'm going to have no difficulty letting aside such feelings. I'll be completely willing and I'll believe. But if I can't see the truth of my situation, and I can't see that I'm faced with alcoholic destruction, and then I have a futile and hopeless way of life, I'm not going to do it. So why don't people get better? Because they can't see the truth. They can't see that they're faced with alcoholic destruction. They can't really take their first step. The reason people don't make it is not because of step 10. It's because they can't take step 1. If you truly take step 1, you're going to, and see it, we soon, it says, faced with alcoholic destruction, comma, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. You see, when I'm faced with the alcoholic destruction, I become open-minded, and then here's what it says. In this respect, alcohol was the great persuader. Powerful paragraph. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. And it says sometimes this was a tedious process. People keep coming in and out, in and out. How much are they going to get beaten? How much beating does it take? And then who makes it tedious? See, I did. Because I couldn't see the truth. And so it's to see my alcoholic destruction, to face it, that I become open-minded. And alcohol is the great persuader. I didn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to be an open-minded. I'm not going to be obstinate anymore, or touchy, or bristle with the dagger. No, I was beaten into it. And I want to be beaten into it every day. I don't want to forget this. I don't think, no matter how long you're sober, you don't want to forget this paragraph. Because when you do, then you're not hopelessly defeated, and you don't seek God. You don't see it on your own. You have no power not to drink. And it says, no, we hope no one will be as prejudiced for as long as some of us were. Now here's the question, how long can you stay physically sober until you're able to let go of this? Until you're able to be open-minded on everything? Willing to go to any length. We read that every meeting. Are you willing to go to any length? Well, you're not going to be willing to go to any length until you're beaten into a state of reasonableness by facing alcoholic destruction. I've seen a lot of people who come to AA and they say they're beaten, but they don't want to give up their old ideas and they don't want to do the work. And they think I'm unreasonable because I tell them to read a chapter or listen to a podcast. I mean, how could I expect something like from them of that? It's so demanding. I'm such a demanding sponsor. I get fired a lot because I ask them to do things and they're not faced with alcoholic destruction. And they can't see it. The reader may still ask why he should believe in a power greater than himself. So they're going to give you some good reasons why you should believe. The first one is that the 20th century, and this was written in 1939, accept theories of all kinds, provided they are firmly grounded in fact. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm waving my hand right now. And the internet's running right through it. How does that work? Who would have believed? I mean, when I was a little kid, we didn't have remote controls. We had to go change the channel, can you imagine? And we didn't have cable. We only had like the antenna. Yeah, I'm old. And then we have new mystery about electricity. But we accept it when we turn the switch, the lights are gonna come on. Anybody think that? Yeah, we just know that. But we can't explain it, can you? And it says, it's impossible to explain what we see, feel, direct, and use without a reasonable assumption as a starting point. Everyone nowadays believes in scores of assumptions for which there's good evidence but no perfect visual proof. And does not science demonstrate that visual proof is the weakest proof? It's being constantly revealed as mankind studies the material world, that outward appearances are not inward reality at all. And that's true when you look at an alcoholic. Outward appearances that have anything to do with the inward reality of what's going on in that person. But I know when I went to medical school, I'm so old that we didn't have CT scans when I was an intern and resident. We actually had to talk to the patient and examine them. Is that something? And we had to figure out from their symptoms what was wrong with them. We had x-rays. We didn't get CAT scans till I was in my senior resident. And then we got MRIs when I was in my fellowship. And when then, now we have PET scans and all sorts of stuff. And we can see more, we know more. We can study a single cancer cell, and we know so many different functions that we have these inhibitors of all these systems that we didn't know exist. Anne left, she had enough. She has to go to bed early, she works hard. And so we accept it. We do the research, and then we give them this drug, and it works. And we didn't even know about this 10 years ago. And now we accept it. When things come along, we do the studies, we accept it, we give it. And things have changed so much, and we have vaccine crisis now. But you know, the information that led to the vaccine was revealed 25 years ago. And then more and more was revealed. And they were already ready for a coronavirus, for a vaccine, before it even came. They already had the technology. All they needed was the genetic code of this specific virus to make the vaccine. That's why it was so fast. So they say prosthetic steel girder is a mass of electrons whirling around. However, the perfect logical assumption suggested that underneath the material world and life as we see it, there's an all-powerful guiding creative intelligence. Right there, a perverse streak comes to the surface, and we laboriously set out to convince ourselves it isn't so. And why? Why would somebody want to do that? Because then they can play God. They don't have to be accountable. They don't have to worry about this higher power. And we live like that, don't we? We can believe in God, but then we act as if God doesn't exist. Could you see that? People have been around when you did your fourth step. You could see how you play God all the time. Where our contention's true and follow that life originated on nothing, means nothing, and proceeds nowhere. Instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation, see, we should regard ourselves that we are intelligent and we're spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation. We agnostics and atheists chose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end of all. Rather vain of us, wasn't it? It's rather vain for the creation to decide that there's no creator. But people who don't want to believe in God, I just ask them to get a cup of coffee and take a sip from the mug. I said, well, how'd you do that? How many different signals in your brain are required to get the coffee cup so you don't pour it on your head? That you can grasp it, and you hold it, and you get it, and you sip it. I mean, probably a billion different signals if you study the medicine like I did. It's incomprehensible how complicated our body is. So I'm going to just end with this. We who have traveled this dubious path, dubious means not good, beg you to lay aside prejudice. And I had to lay aside prejudice against everything and against the steps and anything that anybody told me. You know why? Because I realized now I was wrong about everything when I came in here. And I was telling, I had lunch with the minister yesterday. I was telling him about a minister I sponsor. And 10 years ago, he sat in my family room, and I told him, you're wrong about everything. And he said, he started quoting Plato. I said, I don't care what Plato said. You're wrong. And then after 3 or 4 months, he said to me, you know, I was wrong about everything. Everything I thought I knew and was true was wrong. All my resentments were wrong. All my fears were wrong. All my actions came out of wrong thinking. And today I want to be wrong, because I don't have to be right anymore. That means I can change my mind. So something happened today, and I was trying to explain to my wife what she should do. And I stopped very quickly. I mean, I thought I should get an Olympic gold medal because I stopped within 10 seconds. And I said, you know, this is not my deal. And it's wrong for me to say anything. And then I just went downstairs. Then, of course, something happened that if she'd listened to me, it wouldn't have happened. But I didn't say anything either. You see, it's good when I can see that I'm wrong. I don't have to know everything. Beg you to lay aside prejudgment, even against organized religion. We have learned we don't like organized religion, a lot of alcoholics. Well, why? We have learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, remember human beings made up. And the minister and I were talking, it's about religion sometimes divides people. It makes, some people make rules out of religion and it separates. The faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. People of faith have a logical idea of what life is all about. We want to have faith in our Creator and God. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception, whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically, any cynical dissectors in here of spiritual beliefs and practices. Alcoholics are very good at cynical dissection, aren't they, Grady? Grady and I have had cynically dissecting conversations, haven't we, buddy? He's not listening to me. One might have observed that many spiritually minded persons, but I don't want to cynically dissect anybody anymore. I don't want to do that. We used to do it because it made us feel better about ourselves. But now I see that it's really sick. I don't have to judge other people and make them look bad to make myself good. It's silly. They are who they are. We're all children of God. We should love each other. And I'm going to end with this. We might have observed that many spiritually minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness which we should have sought ourselves. See, we sought to cynically dissect, and what we should have sought was to demonstrate a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness in our lives. Does that make sense? All right, so I'm going to end there, and we'll pick up on page 50 next week. And I hope it was helpful. Thank you.